Welcome to Spielin' and Dealin', the Georgia High School Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle Sandy, the owner of sandyspiel.com. With me today is Ramin Forgani, my producer and moderator of the podcast, or should I say I am with Ramin because I am live in studio. We had the state championship games about to tip off this week, so I had to be here. I had to have perfect sound quality, so I'm here, Ramin. Thank you for having me in the lovely lair known as Northview High School.
Thank you for coming, Kyle. We appreciate it. Coming in studio for the big game. Exciting Final Four matchups around the state. Of course, can't have a big game without controversing the GHSA. We'll get to that later. And I guess an update on what we discussed last week in the boys' Final Four preview. But without further ado, let's get right to it. 7A girls' final, Norcross versus McEachern.
Norcross versus McEachern. Norcross handed McEachern a loss to open the year for McEachern, 57-53 at the Parkview Tip-Off Classic. So this is going to be an interesting one. If you look at what happened in the Final Four, Norcross won an ugly game against Collins Hill, 37-30. While you look at McEachern, who was down early to Archer, they go on and just blow past them, 78-58. And that was Q Morrison having 24.7 rebounds and 10 assists, just doing everything for him. And Q Morrison, she's going to play a huge role because when they lost to Norcross, she got a big technical foul, and that really changed the game. And once she got sent to the bench, Norcross took a 40-26 lead. Now, McEachern, they came back. They rallied back. They made it a close game, ended up falling by 4 points. But if Morrison's on the court the entire game, I'm not sure if that's going to end up going in Norcross's favor since she's so important. And they dug themselves a big hole. If she's not on the bench in the state championship game, this could be a different outcome. Vanessa Blogman had 18 points in that game for Norcross. Myra Strickland stepped up huge with 14 points. Morrison, who was on the bench for a nice little span there, she finished with 14 points. Chanel Wilson had 17. McEachern was 9 of 18 from deep in that game. And Man, it's going to be a tight matchup. Norcross is going to have to lean on those Division I guards, Tia Lyons going to Pittsburgh, Taylor Mason going to Miami. We already talked about Blogman, who's going to South Florida. But McEachern and Coach Phyllis Arthur, all they do is win state titles. They're going for a four-peat. And if I had to predict this game, and I'm going to give my pick on every single championship game. And Ramin, you know how I hate giving picks because it's usually a kiss of death or it's wrong or it's just, you know, it's really a coin flip. You never know which team's going to show up. But I would have to lean towards McEachern getting a fourth straight title, just too much championship game experience. Morrison is so big. Lindsay Wilby had 16 points against Archer. Jasmine Clements inside had 11 points and 17 rebounds. That is just such a strong trio right there and a lot of help and a lot of great coaching. So I'm going with McEachern in this one.
Over to 7A boys, Norcross. They're trying to run the state. They have two teams all the way to the championship. Norcross taking on Tift County.
Tift County, who would have thought Tift County would make it this far? And these two teams, they do have some history. When Tift County made that state title run back in 2014, it was the Blue Devils. Well, there's actually two Blue Devils here, so I should say it was the Tift County Blue Devils beating Norcross in the Final Four 78-70. So Norcross is going to want a little bit of revenge here. But if Tift County does win the state championship, just look at this run they made. It has to go down as the best run in history, right? They would beat three nationally ranked teams, and that would be Newton, McEachern, and Norcross. And we'll talk about what happened in the Final Four, but spoiler alert, they beat McEachern. And if you want to look at it on the Sandy Spiel final regular season rankings, they would have beat number one, which was McEachern, number two, Newton, would have beat number four, Norcross in this championship game, and number seven, Berkmar. That is some heavy sledding coming out of that group of death, which we mentioned earlier when the brackets were announced. That would be a huge accomplishment for Tift County. And they beat McEachern, gave McEachern their only loss of the season in the Final Four, 56-49. P.J. Horn has just been a man. He is just a grown adult on the low block, 6'6", going to Virginia Tech. He had 15 points in the first half, finished with 17 points. McEachern finally was able to make adjustments. But Micah Johnson, who's going to Alabama State, he gave you 15 points in that game, and you got Rashad Bateman, who can knock down threes. A lot of good pieces. Now, what's this game going to come down to? I think it's going to come down to depth and toughness. Now, Norcross, they're going to have more depth than Tift County. Tift County doesn't play too many guys. Norcross is very deep. They beat Grayson 67-48, and the stars shined in that one, and they're going to have to shine again if they want to win another state title. But Tift County, they're gonna attack you with that no-nonsense physical approach. We're not afraid of anybody. We've beaten everybody. Norcross, you're just another team. So Tift County, Coach Holland, they're going to have them rolling. It's going to be a tough matchup. But like I said, it's going to come down to who's tougher. Can Lance Thomas go into Louisville 6-9? Can he stop P.J. Horn? Looking back at that Grayson game, which Norcross beat him 67-48, Thomas had a good game, had 12 points, 3 blocks. Rayshon Hammond's going to Georgia. He's going to have to be the star and difference maker in this game. He had 20 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks. And then you look at the guards, Jordan Goldwire, 9.7 assists. He played very well, and Kyle Sturdivant had 14 points. So what is my prediction in this game? If I had to make a pick, I have to go with Norcross, who I picked to win it all since the brackets first came out. That would be their 6th title and first since 2013. I think they just have a little bit more balance. They have some length. If they're able to man up and play tough with P.J. Horn and match his physicality, I think Norcross can win this one. But Rayshon Hammonds, that X factor at 6'8", can shoot it, can put on the go off the dribble, get to the basket, do a lot of good things. I think he's just going to be a handful, and Coach Jesse McMillan's a good coach. So I'm going to lean towards Norcross. But, hey, if you're Tift County, everyone's been picking against you the entire state tournament. So it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But I would have to lean towards Norcross at least being a favorite in this game.
This game will tip off on Saturday, March 11th at 8 p.m., the primetime slot, the last championship game in the state at Georgia Tech. Going down to 6A on the girls' side, Harrison takes on Mays.
Mays is pretty much a one-man band. Okay, they were down 16 points early to Lovejoy, and then Kamaya Street just turned it on like she always does. She's the best scorer left in the state tournament, especially in that classification. She went off for 32 points. She sparked her own personal 16-0 run. She is just dynamic. She had 25 points in that second half. So they rallied to beat Lovejoy 50-42. But if you're looking at Harrison, they are back being one of the best teams in the entire state since Sydney Wiggins is back healthy, the Rice signee. She's back healthy. She really paced the Hoyas past Northview 57-39. I previewed that game saying Northview, they're going to have to use her size, and they're going to have to hope that Harrison's not hitting from the three-point land. Harrison was hitting threes. And if they're hitting threes and they're hitting their shots and you're not closing out on them with the hand in their face right when they catch the ball, they are going to burn you. Wiggins had 21 points in that game. Jazzy Foster, Audrey Jordan, 10 points apiece. Just so much to throw out there. And it's going to be difficult for Mays to really keep up. Can Street really carry that team against such a balanced attack? Chingali can shoot the three ball. Harper Vick, very good as well. Woke here and just so many players. Willis, another good guard. So many great options. Coach Lenahan, I don't see him letting one girl beat them. So that means I got to go with Harrison. They've been my number one team for pretty much the entire season. Mays has that superstar power, but I just don't see Kamaya Street being able to do that much and just carry a team against such a good, balanced team like Harrison.
On the boys' side of 6A, Brunswick is going to be taking on Langston Hughes.
Brunswick, can they slow down Landers Nolley? That is the big question, and not many people have been able to do it. Langston Hughes, they slipped by Altoona 59-57, and it was Nolley again with 34 points. He hit about 6 threes in that first half alone. He was just on fire, knocking down every single shot. If he gets hot, you're in trouble. He is one of the premier scorers in the entire state. He's really asserted himself and really pushed ahead in that race for being Class 6A Player of the Year, and for good reason. If he carries that team all the way to a championship, yeah, you really can't deny that. And he gets help from Derek Cook, who had 15 points in that win. And if you're going for Brunswick, David Boyd, they're homegrown in the Wicker. That's their motto they're saying with Coach David Boyd, who is a character. He's helping Coach Turner out over there, and Coach Boyd said, this is David versus Goliath. Now, I don't think this is David versus Goliath. He said Langston Hughes is bigger than them at every position. Well, he forgot they have 6'8", 260-pounder Kamani Dunham inside. So that's kind of big body that Langston Hughes is going to have to deal with. But Brunswick, they got past South Cobb 67-61. Derek Lampkin, 19 points and 10 rebounds. Marcus Scott, 16 points. And Dunham, 10 points and 7 rebounds. But I think Dunham's going to have a much bigger game if they want to beat Langston Hughes. He's going to have to make his presence felt on that low block. He's going to have to use his body, use that size. And if Derek Cook and others, Langston Hughes, they try and get to the rim, he's going to have to turn some of those shots back, but he can't get in foul trouble. So if I had to go with a pick in this one, of course, it's going to be Brunswick going to have to play good defense against Langston Hughes, but I think I'm going with Langston Hughes in this one, just with that superstar. When you have a superstar like that that has some other options, it's a little different from the Kamaya Street and Mays. She's pretty much a one-man team. Landers Nolley has some help with Derek Cook, who's going Division I Northeastern. I think Landers Nolley and Langston Hughes, they get the job done, even though Brunswick does have a little more balance and those guards are tough, and they played a little bit of an underdog role all season long. But Langston Hughes, that 3 seed out of that great Region 5, I think they get the job done. They've had such a tough road. You beat Gainesville at Gainesville. They played all these games on the road, no home games throughout the playoffs. You beat Altoona, best defensive team in the state, pretty much every single season. You beat them 59-57. You have all the results in your favor. So I'm going with Langston Hughes in this one.
At the University of Georgia tomorrow, the 6 o'clock game in Class 5A, Southwest DeKalb will be taking on Buford.
Yep, that's a great dream matchup for you. Southwest DeKalb, defending state champions. Buford, they did not win the state title last year. They faltered, I believe, and did not get the job done. So they're hungry for another title game. And Coach Gene Durden is all about winning state championships. So that's going to be a fun one. Southwest DeKalb had a really tough one against Flowery Branch. They were down, but they just had a little more juice in the tank. Tania Worth from Flowery Branch scored 33 points, but it was Southwest DeKalb scoring a 66-63 win. That was Jada Walton having 22 points. Runa Usiwaba had 13 points, and Chance Cherry had 10 points. It's going to be a tough game for Southwest DeKalb. With that being said, Buford had 5 girls in double figures. They beat Griffin 88-50. You win by 38 points in the Final Four with a big girl that's going to Cincinnati inside. You hold her to 16 points, and you beat them by 38. I mean, that just tells you Buford is just the real deal. They have so much going on. Tori Osmond, that Region 8 Player of the Year, had 14 points. Tate Walters, Snooty Johnson, 11 points apiece. Audrey Wiener. Jessica Nelson, 11 points as well. So there's just so much going well for Buford right now. It's going to be tough for Southwest DeKalb. The big key here for Southwest DeKalb, can she control that game a little bit inside? We just saw Andija Puckett for Griffin. She had 16 points. That was nice, but she had 16 points and a 38-point loss. Can Uwasaba control that paint and be a difference maker and really dominate inside and let that open up for Jada Walton and Cherry and Lainey Edwards and these good scorers on the perimeter? I don't know. It's going to be a tough task for her. I think Buford gets their 8th state title in this one. I think the Wolves guards are just way too poised. I don't think they're going to unravel late if Southwest DeKalb throws a press at them. I mean, they've seen a lot of good teams. I just don't see them folding under the pressure. And I like Buford in this one.
Similarly, in the 5A boys game, Cedar Shoals will be taking on Buford, and if UGA tomorrow is not filled to the brim with green, I don't know what stadium will be filled.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What about Cedar Shoals? They're right there in Athens, too, Ramin. Don't disrespect the Jag fans like that. You know the Jaguars are going to be there loud and proud, right?
I'm just saying sheer number, right? Buford has 2 teams. Cedar Shoals has 1.
Very true, very true, but you know,
you can appeal to a wider audience.
Coach Dreco, he's going to make sure he gets that whole community out supporting him. And these are familiar foes. These next couple of classifications, a lot of familiar foes. This is going to be their 4th meeting. Now, can Cedar Shoals get over the hump? I don't know. I watched them play the first meeting when they played at Cedar Shoals, 72-66. Buford won that one. Cedar Shoals, this was a massive game of runs, a 12-point run here, a 15-0 run here. Back and forth, and got tight. A silly lane violation really did end Cedar Shoals late. But that was a game that Donnell Nixon just went insane from deep. You cannot let the little 5'7 guy from Buford get going, and then Marcus Watson is just a load. And then in the second game, this one was at Buford, 75-70. Cedar Shoals loses again. This is another one. Buford kind of pulled this one out of the fire, hit a late shot to send it into overtime. And they found a way. And then Region 8 Championship, again, Cedar Shoals just runs out of gas, 76-61. They just failed to close out Buford. When they have a fourth quarter lead, you have to hold on to that with all your might. Just cannot let Alex Jones cut you up with his passing. Can't let Nixon get hot from deep. You got David Vitti inside doing so many good things. Dawson Wehunt gives you a little spark here and there. Just so many pieces for Buford. But Cedar Shoals, the main thing that they've struggled with, they got to slow down Marcus Watson. 6'6 sophomore. He is willing to shoot the three ball. He will crush you on the glass. He will attack the rim hard. You got to find someone to slow him down. And if you are Cedar Shoals, Flan Fleming. He's got to be the man on that court. He had a great game against Miller Grove. They blew out Miller Grove 59-38. He had 25 points in that one. And Buford, hey, I can't sleep on Buford. They destroyed Fayette County 83-60. And guess who couldn't be stopped? It was Marcus Watson, 25 points, 14 rebounds. Alex Jones puts in 23 points. Beattie adds 16. Just so much balance for Coach Eddie Martin. And in this game, it's tough to beat a team two times. It's tough to beat a team three times. It's usually nearly impossible to beat a team four times. But with that being said, Buford is just so good this year. I love Drecko. I love Cedar Shoals. But Buford, this could be the start of a big-time dynasty over there with that new Buford City Schools Arena. You got all these sophomores, pretty much everybody coming back next year. This could be a long-standing thing, seeing Buford in the state title game.
So you're predicting a Buford sweep of the finals.
Indeed. Looking back at it, that looks right. There's going to be a lot of green, and there's going to be a lot of trophies coming back to Buford, I think.
Down to 4A, on the girls' side, two teams that should be very geographically familiar with each other share the same town, Columbus taking on Carver Columbus.
And I was at Class 4A. I was at the semifinals this past week over at Augusta State University. And again, two teams meeting for the fourth time this year. And let's just go down the history, a little path of results for you. 69-53 was the first game. Carver won that one. But Araya Copeland, the big girl going to Alabama, did not play for Columbus. Round two, 77-53. Now Columbus blows out Carver. And then in the Region 1 championship, again, 53 has been the unlucky number. Every single game you see, whoever scores 53 points loses. 54-53, Carver beats Columbus on a Maya Milner buzzer beater. So what do you think about this game? All right, Columbus, you have the big girls inside. Tatiana Wyatt, she is a monster, along with Copeland. Wyatt in their 62-50 win over Sandy Creek. She had 26 points, 13 rebounds, 2 blocks. Araya Copeland, 11 points, 17 rebounds, and 4 blocks. Carver Columbus, they get past Cross Creek 60-56. They withstood Elena Davis, who's going to Memphis, a power post that can do just, you know, dribble the ball up the court and create and do everything. She had 31 points, 12 rebounds, 2 blocks. But Carver, used to seeing these great big girls over in Columbus. They get that 60-56 win. Mariah Igus, 18 points. Alicia Reese, 15. And Maya Milner, 11 points. So it's going to be a little bit of guards versus bigs. And Columbus, you always think, man, their guard play might be what's going to hinder them from going deep. But no, 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 no. The emergence of Brittany Floyd, she has been incredible. She was phenomenal in that win over Sandy Creek, the senior guard. Averages about 7 points per game. She just brings bundles and bundles of energy for Coach Cerrone. She is just great out there. She had 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. She was just all over the place. And if she plays like that in the state title game, I mean, Columbus is going to be just so difficult to beat, because when she's just dynamic out there, playing good defense, getting rebounds, blocking shots. I was stunned with how great she played. Floyd is a definite difference maker in this one. And with that being said, I would have to favor Columbus to win the title. Wyatt and Copeland inside, that is a handful for Carver to try and slow down. And if Floyd is out there knocking down shots and trying to play lockup defense, Columbus, the Blue Devils, they are going to be very difficult to stop.
On the boys' side of Class 4A, a game that you've been hyping up mighty well, a game you were at the semifinals in 4A, Upps and Lee will be taking on St. Pius.
Well, who would have thought this would all shake out? But I will say it this way. Preseason, top 10 in Class 4A. I don't I don't have the championship teams in there, but we had it. Number one was Henry County. They got beat by Upson Lee, 74-59. Upson Lee was the number three ranked team preseason. St. Pius was the number four ranked team preseason. Who did St. Pius beat? They beat preseason number two, Sandy Creek. So not bad, not bad. My top four in Class 4A, they all make it to the Final Four. So we got 3-4 in the championship instead of 1-2, but I'll take that. But I got to start with that St. Pius game. This team looks completely different than when I saw them get beat by Hillgrove at the SEBA tournament over at Pope High School. They came out and punched Sandy Creek right in the mouth. They led 15-2 to open up. Pressure defense, full court pressing, flying around, great effort, just diving for loose balls. Upson Lee is going to have to match their intensity. On offense, drives behind a drive, making the extra pass. They'll catch the ball on the perimeter. It's going to be a head fake. It's going to be a ball fake. They're going to just, you know, be so fundamentally sound and do everything to get to the basket or find the open man and just extra effort. Carson Saramore had 22 points in that 19-point win for him. He had 10 in the fourth quarter. It looks like Maddie Gonzalez had 15 points. Everett Lane, who we talked about in the last podcast, he is just on fire, knocking down threes, doing everything. He had 17 more points for them. And as a team, they were 32 of 35 from the foul line. If you're 32 of 35 from the foul line, I mean, boy, oh boy, that's something special. Coach Aaron Parr, just a master game planner. They had an incredible crowd there. And now they're going to be 15 minutes away from campus at Georgia Tech. So they are going to have that place rocking. But the entire city of Thomaston is going to be there to support their undefeated Upson Lee Knights. Now, they had a tough matchup. They were playing Henry County, 74-59. They took care of business. Now, Henry County, they were without Kobe Tate, 6'5", big man. Their leading rebounder on that team, great physical presence. They did not have him, and Trayvon Walker really abused them inside. The big fella, 6'6", had 16 points, 13 rebounds, had 3 blocks. Very good. But Ty Fagan, who has been great all year long, he got in foul trouble. When he was out on the court, Henry County was able to keep it close, hang around. When he picked up his fourth foul with 1:15 left in the third quarter, that's when it was uh-oh time, right? Uh-oh time. Here comes Henry County. No, sir. Upson Lee, the guards, everybody out there, they picked up the slack. When he checked back in, it was about an 11-point game, and they were able to close that one out. And even though he didn't play too much, Fagan, he's just always going to be the best player on the court. Even in limited duty, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 steals, 1 block. He was not on, though. He was definitely not on. I don't know if that's because he was in foul trouble, couldn't get into a groove. His jumper was not falling. He was missing wide. He missed a lot of free throws. Upson Lee left a lot of points on the line there, tried to leave the door open for Henry County. But Henry County, the Warhawks, could not take advantage of it. Javon Green had 24 points, 6 rebounds, 6 steals, but they just could not bust through, and Upson Lee took it to them. So if you're looking at this game, Upson Lee, they're going to have to attack the glass. Trayvon Walker, Ja'Cory Smith, who's been great, stepping up in Kentress Traylor's absence after he went down with a season-ending injury. He gave you a very nice spark again, 10 points, 9 rebounds. He hits the glass hard. Zyrie Scott, he had 18 points, had 11 points in the fourth quarter. The little man, babyface assassin over there, just so good. And Upson Lee, that's a team, I guess they do want to play fast. I mean, Henry County got into a little bit of an AAU game at sometimes, running up and down the court, little helter-skelter. But, I mean, what's that Batman saying or whatever it is? We love to live in the dark or, I don't know, whatever, Bane. I don't know. I'm not big on Batman. But just like that, we love the pressure. We love the crazy scenarios like that. And they handled it well. If St. Pius is going to press them, I know St. Pius is going to be playing great defense. It's going to be ugly at times, but Upson Lee has just passed all their tests, and it's going to be interesting. But here's one very important one to share with you, this shared opponents thing. So St. Pius, they played Stevens County 3 times throughout the regular season. They beat them 70-68, 56-39, and in the region championship, 84-59. Upson Lee, they saw Stevens County in the second round. They won 76-71, 5-point win. A little close, but it was their first meeting with them. You look at what happened with Upson Lee and Mary Persons. Upson Lee pounds them 71-53, 80-59. Region championship, blow them out 84-65. What St. Pius do against Mary Persons in the second round? 71-74. So these two teams, very interesting, these first meetings with opposite opponents that they're neutral with, very close games. Does that mean anything? I really have no idea. It hasn't really meant anything all season long, but if I have to go with a pick here, it's just tough to pick against Upson Lee. They're not going to be the best-looking team out there. You're going to shake your head a couple times like Ramin just did right now. I don't think he was disagreeing with me. I think he had to scratch his head. But they just get the job done. They win. And when you have Ty Fagan, if he gets going, if he knocks down a couple shots early, if he stays out of foul trouble and Trayvon Walker's out of foul trouble, I think Upson Lee is going to have the goods to win this one. But I think this crowd is just going to be electric. This might be the best crowd we've seen in years for a state title game. So get there early. I don't know if it's going to sell out the entire arena, but it's going to be a lot of tickets sold for that one. It's going to be a lot of fun. That is a game I am very much looking forward to.
Yeah, you're hyping that one up so much. That's going to be one I have to attend. It's going to be at Georgia Tech on Friday, 6 and 8, boys and girls, respectively, for Class 4A. And as we did during the boys' Final Four, we need to, I guess, provide a little update for the topic of that conversation. We were talking about what could happen with the future of the GHSA, and there was a great piece written by, I believe, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution editor, who Kyle's disagreeing with me here.
They probably ripped that off from somebody. There was a better piece, I believe it was Dalton Citizen and DJ, oh, forgive me for getting his name, but from the Valdosta Times, they did a great piece with a lot of good quotes in there. That is a piece you should really check out over there. Valdosta Times and Dalton Citizen, I believe it was, kind of teaming up to write a piece. That's something you should check out. But, Ramin, go on with your propaganda of the three-letter publication over there.
Propaganda, okay. So I thought it was a very eloquently worded and written piece, an editorial by the AJC editor, who spoke about what directions the GHSA could take, and that kind of prompted our conversation last week. And sure enough, this week, it seems like the GHSA has rolled over and they've forced the resignation of Executive Director Gary Phillips. And in a very, I believe, eloquently worded and well-written open letter to the public that was published yesterday, he announced his resignation at the end of the year and kind of laid out a bit pointedly how he was forced out and how he decided to concede this battle and move on. Kyle, your thoughts?
Before I touch on that, I got the authors. That was Jill Nolan and then Derek Davis, who is from the Valdosta paper, helping out at that Dalton Daily Citizen. So the title of that story, if you want to Google it, Overhaul of Athletic Association Slows, but GHSA Remains Under Fire. Very good piece, came out on March 3rd. But yes, that was interesting seeing old Gary trying to, you know, having a pulse there, trying to fight back, but no, they haven't really done a great job. I mean, it's just so many silly black eyes over and over again, a lot of black eyes just making mistakes. Then I'm sure we're going to touch on a scoring scenario, which is, I mean, that's not really their thing, but just a lot of stuff has gone wrong for the GHSA, and with him stepping down, now we'll see who is going to take over. Is it going to be one of the good old boys? Is it just going to be his best friend taking over? Is it going to be someone with change? That, I mean, the main thing is we need someone with a vision, someone that's going to do well and do right by the schools and the athletes and the parents and everybody. It would be nice to see a little bit of youth movement over there at Thomaston, where the GHSA headquarters is, a little bit of injection of livelihood and common sense of what's going on around them. We're not in the 1980s anymore. A lot of things have changed. But with him resigning, going to be very interesting. Very interesting to see who's going to step up and fulfill that mantle. And hopefully it's someone good and someone that wants the best for this the state and athletic association. And if not, those politicians are going to be knocking on the door and they're going to say, hey,
once again,
we're taking over. So whether you like it or not. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds and who's going to take over.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues still facing the GHSA is how do they want to deal with transfers? How do they want to try to cut down on the fraud? That's something the, I guess, now outgoing executive director mentioned in that letter. But
yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. That's always going to be there, a sticky situation. There's been other rulings of how they're going to deny transfers. You miss half the season, you miss whole season. A lot of stuff is going to be changing in the next 12 months, I think.
And interesting, that's the opposite direction of what's coming out of the state legislature in the bill that was proposed. And I assume, based on the what I've read, that it's now going to be rescinded since they got Phillips to resign. But the bill proposed, I guess, a freedom of transfers where there would be little to no restriction. You know, you could just transfer for as freely as you wanted.
Yeah, laissez-faire, like down in Florida. I read that in an article. Yeah, it's already the wild, wild west right now. Silly idea would be something like, if you want to have 24 teams, just say we're going to be, you don't want to call it the open market or call it the open division, where you can say, okay, you can transfer in here and you can have 24 teams that are all able to recruit whoever they want, which is, I mean, that's not going to work well with the closed leagues, but you have 24 teams in that open division, and from those 24 teams, you could practically trade players, not necessarily trade players, but you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, you'd be creating an NBA and a D-League.
Yeah. Transfer player from school A to school B, because we have school A through school Z in this 24-team league where it's all open transfer and no one's going to bat an eye about it. That would be very interesting. You think about the Wild Wild West, that'd be something, but and then that would protect the smaller schools like a Swainsboro or a Northview or a Appalachia or schools like that, Banks County schools that don't have all these influxes of transfers. But if you look at the big boy schools that always have 3-4 players moving in each and every year, if you want to get a 24-team league and say, oh, this is the open division, you guys can all transfer across from all these schools and Wild West it that way. But that's just crazy talk right there.
That's an idea I hadn't heard previously.
Just something I threw out there. It's not going to happen. It probably shouldn't happen, but just something, if these schools just can't stop picking players from everybody else, you say, hey, if you're going to pick players, I can pick players back, 24, 32-team league, open division, grab whoever you want.
Well, I guess that gets more to the heart of what's better, high school basketball or AAU, because that's very AAU style. Anybody can go wherever they want to, assuming you can make the team, and you play against other stacked teams. And
yeah, I'm more so of the homegrown type of legislation of the high school game, but AAU is, a lot of people say, that's corrupted basketball, which very well you could point to that and say that. I know a lot of people feel strongly both ways with that, but yeah, just a wacky idea. What if we had a 32-team open division? Say, hey, transfer market, it's all crazy, but you can't touch anybody out of those other 400 schools that aren't in that open division.
If that gets implemented, I believe we'd have pandemonium in Georgia.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
But we'll move right along to Class 3A on the ladies' side. Beach taking on Johnson Savannah.
Well, 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 here we go again. A fifth meeting between these two schools, who were top 1, 2, and 3 all season long. They battled each other, swapped places. So let me run down the results. 45-42, first meeting, went to Johnson. In that second meeting, 62-56 in overtime, Beach got that one. Then another overtime one, it was Beach again winning, 52-49. Then in the Region 3 championship, Adam Smashers of Johnson, 61-57. So by those four games, they split 2-2. Those four games decided by 16 points. But Ramin, you know what's interesting? I tallied the point totals. In the point totals, Beach has outscored Johnson 213-211. I mean, this rivalry has been as even as it gets. And now they get to showcase this on the big stage at the state championship. That is that's something special. And we look at Beach. They had a controversial win, I guess, over GAC in overtime, 56-47. But Judasia Hills really punished GAC around the basket, 22 points, 15 rebounds. Jabrika Bass, 11 points and 11 rebounds. Took it to those Division I signees and commits for GAC. So that was just a very eye-opening win for those scrappy Bulldogs. Then you look at Johnson Savannah. Alexis Pierce, 16 points. Bubbles Williams, 9 points. Jemiah Cutter, 8 points as they erase defending state champion Morgan County, 48-39. So these two teams, they meet in the championship game. This is the epitome of a coin flip game. Really, heads, it's going to be Johnson. Tails, it's going to be Beach. But, I don't really have much rhyme or reason behind this one because they're so evenly matched. I would have to go with Beach in this one. I'm picking Beach because they did beat a great GAC team, even though it was interesting. I know Ramin wants to talk about that one.
Yeah.
But I'm going with Beach in this one.
So it appears as if multiple reports from the GAC parents and the head coach there and kind of bits and pieces of the media substantiating this, that there was a scoring error in the GAC game in the final four, whereas a free throw was missed in the third quarter of the game, which ultimately led to the game went into overtime. So theoretically, had that free throw been correctly counted, it would have led the GAC Spartans to a win and prevented overtime. We have not been able to fully substantiate that yet, as we haven't watched the full game film to keep track of that, but it appears like from the little 2-3 minute YouTube video comparing the game film to the NFHS broadcast, it was 28-26, and then it was quickly corrected down to 28-25. I'm assuming after the person working the score bug for the broadcast saw the scoreboard, and the officials came over, they decided the free throw was missed, and once the official score signs the book, it's all over. So, Kyle, is this another incident in a long line?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it's not the GHSA that's sitting there and doing the scoring, but someone needs to be held accountable. There's way too much on the line. I don't know who the official score was. Maybe that's something that should be looked into. If it's not already, I'm not sure, but shouldn't that be a GHSA member that knows something about basketball doing the official book so we don't have to deal with this anymore and you don't have to push away any blame or anything like that? But boy, that is a hellacious, tough break for GAC. And we know about that's happened before with Swainsboro and Holy Innocence, and it just happens a little bit too much, a little too often in the state tournaments. It happens once, it should happen no time. So that's just a tough break for GAC.
And one thing I'm really having trouble understanding is how it happens on a free throw. Right, maybe you have difficulty saying if it's a 2 or 3 in game, you know, going back and forth. On a free throw, the game is dead, and you should be able to pretty clearly see whether the ball went into the basket or not.
Yeah, that's something. I don't know if you just missed it, but your job is to watch the game. Stay focused. You're not looking at your phone. You're not tweeting. You're not taking a picture. You're not Snapchatting. You got to watch what's happening in front of you, and that's inexcusable. And you had the best seat in the house. It's not like me that sometimes I'll be up and I can't see and you got people standing in front of you. You are ground level. You're staring right at the action. Inexcusable.
We'll keep it moving on to 3A boys. They play March the 9th, UGA, at 4 o'clock, one of the early boys games. Pace Academy taking on Morgan County.
Pace Academy basically just won 2 state championships in these past 2 rounds. You beat Westside, make it in double overtime, 53-50. You beat Liberty County, 71-62. Everything's coming up roses for Pace Academy. They took care of Liberty County. They jumped out to a big lead. We're up about 20 points. Panthers came charging back with those 2 great guards. That was Will Richardson finishing with 28 points. Davion Mitchell going to Auburn. His career ended with 19 points. But inside, usually they say guard play always wins out, but not when you have a McDonald's All-American, Wendell Carter. 32 points and 17 rebounds, and Isaiah Kelly, 20 points and 12 rebounds. They overwhelmed a Liberty County smaller front court, and that's as good as it gets. And now on that other side, Morgan County, they took care of Calhoun, 72-61. Chapin Ryerson had 26 points in the loss for Calhoun. You look at those super sophomores, Tyron Lawrence, 21 points. Alec Woodard had 13 points for Morgan County. Anthony Cooper, 13 as well. And Demarion Thomas added 10. But, I mean, that's going to be an uphill battle. That's going to be super tough for Morgan County to match that size inside and that firepower that Pace Academy has. And I really do like Pace Academy to repeat as state champions and send Wendell Carter off to Duke with another title.
Down to Class 2A on the ladies' side. One of your favorites, Laney, taking on Raven County.
Yeah, Laney really handled their business. They got Victoria Saxon in foul trouble, who ended up scoring 21 points for Model, but not enough, 65-49. And the scary thing here is if Laney's getting help from people other than Deshaun Benjamin and Aubriana Bonner, I mean, oh my goodness. Jaden Hamilton had 19 points. Jasmine Bartlett had 14 points. If those two are supporting Bonner and Deshaun Benjamin, who's the superstar of that team, who finished with 18 points in that game. That's going to be tough to beat. But Rabin, They handled their business. They took it to Bleckley County, 65-37. Georgia Stockton, 18 points. Savannah Scott, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 5 steals. And Brooke Henricks, 14 points. Now, I think Raven's going to surprise some people. They're gonna go out there. I think they're gonna give a nice scare to Laney with just how skilled they are. They trap. They play fast. They have good senior ball handlers. They can shoot the three. If they're hitting their three-pointers, anything can go. You know, anything happens, anything can go. Dee Dee Dillard's a good coach. They're going to have a game plan for Benjamin and the rest of Laney. But I think at the end of the day, Laney just has just enough to get past them. I think Raven might end up running out of gas. But again, I caution you, the Lady Cats, they are for real. They'll stroke that three ball. They'll move around. They play some pesky defense, and that's some top-notch defense Laney hasn't seen too much this season. So we'll see how it shakes up. But I'm going with Laney in this one.
The boys play at the Georgia Institute of Technology on Saturday, March 11th at 4 p.m. We have Swainsboro taking on South Atlanta.
That's going to be tough for Swainsboro. Swainsboro, they don't have much depth. They don't really play anybody other than their starting five. Jalen McKinney is going to have to be just blowing up on all cylinders. He did his job. He had 30 points in a 68-64 win over Dublin. Out-battled Cameron Paulda, who finished with 27, so he led the way, and he was a real deal. But that lack of depth really hurts them. There's not much room for error. Guys like Justin Harris, Jamil Watkins, they're going to have to step up big time to help them out. And can Eddie Roberts hang around with Tyler Thornton, 6'7", post inside for South Atlanta? That's going to be tough. And if you're South Atlanta, Jalen Stiegel had 22 points. 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and their 61-50 win over Josie. You got him. You got Devontae Pullings. You have Frank Bailey added to the mix. DeAndre Barnes. All those guards. They're going to have to make McKinney work on defense, get his legs tired, attack him, make him a two-way player. Don't let him slack off at all on defense. So if he's playing good defense or having to defend long possessions, that may make it tougher for him to score on offense. I think South Atlanta is a team to beat this year. I think they eventually wear down Swainsboro, and I have the Hornets winning a state title.
In Class A public, on the ladies' side, that game is going to be at UGA Stegman Coliseum on March the 8th at 2 o'clock. Telfair County taking on Pelham, who you'd called, feels like months ago, with the state championship win.
Yeah, Pelham, the boogeyman. I know Stuart Glenn listening to this podcast over there in Pelham. Shout out to him. He's a true Hornet fan. Pelham's a team to beat. Only title came back in 1997. Pelham's awesome. They're going to win the state title. I will be shocked. I will eat crow. I will lose 20 pounds in weight, which I need to do anyway, so I might have to root for Telfair. I got to be healthy over here. I'm going on a heavy diet, but Pelham's the best. They're super. They're awesome. They beat Wheeler County, 81-67. Destiny Thomas, 26 points. Mahogany Randall, 21 points. And listen to this. They got two girls on the team with the first name Mahogany. If that's not special, I don't know what special is. Mahogany Brown, 11 points in that win. And so they won 81-67. Wheeler County is a team that Telfair saw twice. Telfair beat them 66-59 the first one. Second time they played Wheeler County, they lost 50-48. And that's kind of that's tough because Pelham blew them out. But Telfair, they're going to have to get Nyasia Howard, Tashiana Rozier, India Wells. They're going to have to literally play perfect to beat Pelham. I do not see that happening. I see Pelham rolling. Coach Tukes, they're going to win the state title. Pelham's the best, and I love Pelham. Like you said, I called them since the beginning of the year. Pelham is the best team in Class A public, and they're going to show it in a big way. Championship.
The gentleman's side, Wilkinson County taking on Calhoun County.
Teams have been kind of slowing down Calhoun County's Rayshon Williams lately, I hear. 6'6 wing, region player of the year. He's got some potential to end up in college somewhere. I don't know how high or what level, but there's been people kicking the tires on him as a Division I type guy if he improves his jump shot, which he might have. I haven't seen him yet this season, but saw him a lot over the summer. A lot of people like him, but that's going to be a great battle. Rayshon Williams versus Clarence Jackson over there at Wilkinson, who he has a ring on his finger from last year's championship team. He was Region 7 Player of the Year. Wilkinson County is just so experienced. They have all these championships for a reason. They have 8 state titles. Dr. Jeter, he finds a way to win games over there, and I think he's going to win another one. Larry Jones, Jalen Lamar, help out Clarence Jackson. I think it's just going to be a little too much for Calhoun County. I like Wilkinson to win their 9th state title and take it back to the Palace with just another banner to hang up there.
9. Wow, that's a large number.
Yes.
A private girls' side, Holy Innocence Wesleyan.
All right, this is going to be a history lesson because somehow, some way, these two teams always see each other. It was, even though Holy Innocence is a great team, that is an upset. They beat St. Francis. St. Francis's first loss in-state all year, 63-61. Maya Dodson going to Stanford, McDonald's All-American, 1 of 2 on the team, only had 6 points. Kashi Kishkatua, 12 points. She's going to Tennessee. Caleb Pointer had 18 points. She is going to LSU. Kayla Hubbard, 16 points for Holy Innocence. And they see Wesleyan, who just, they blew out. They blew out Lakeview Academy. And they have Michaela Coombs, who had 28 points, 9 rebounds. UConn, another McDonald's All-American. So let me set the table here. Let me work backwards. So this year, we meet again, is what I had to say here. First matchup, 61-54, Holy Innocence. Second matchup, 81-74, Holy Innocence. But in the Region 5 Championship, Wesleyan clips them, 59-50. Okay, so let's rewind last year. This is a rematch of a state title game. Actually, I think these teams are meeting in the state title game for a third straight year, Ramin. They're meeting for a third straight, and that is even...
Dynasty.
Yes, influxing St. Francis into this, I wouldn't say love triangle, but a rivalry. And even St. Francis couldn't break that mold there. So 2015-16, Wesleyan wins 58-52 first game, then Holy Innocence wins 57-54, 59-55, and then what happens in the championship game? Holy Innocence wins again. They win in overtime, 66-64, so Holy Innocence reigning champions. So they won that one, but you go a year back, Holy Innocence was perfect throughout the season, won all 3 games against them. They meet them in the state title game. Only loss of the season comes to Wesleyan, 45-31. So what does that tell you? That tells me that Holy Innocence, they usually dominate the regular season series against them. And they took care of business last year in the state title game. But Wesleyan finds a way to really rise to the occasion and beat them when it hurts the most. They beat them in the region championship this year, 2 years ago. They really took it to them in the championship game. Holy Innocence has their number a little bit. Looking back, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They won 5 out of their last 7 games against them, so... that bodes well for Holy Innocence, but you know this one's going to be nip and tuck. This one is going to come down to the wire. But I'm going with Holy Innocence in this one. I think they're going to repeat as state champs, and they're going to get rid of that voodoo curse that Wesleyan sometimes spells over them in big championship games. They got rid of it last year. I think they're going to get rid of it again, and Holy Innocence wins another title.
Class A private, the boys' side, the final championship we have to preview today. Green Forest taking on Southwest Atlanta Christian.
If you look on paper, this game's not going to look like a championship game. It's going to be DeAndre Ballard or bust, 6'6", going to Florida for SACA. But in their first meeting this year, 85-58, Green Forest smacked him. Ballard had 26 points. Region 5 championship, it was a little closer, but still 67-55, Green Forest wins. And if you even want to go back to last year, 80-51, you beat him by 31 points. Ballard has 21 points in that game. So Green Forest has just crushed these guys. But you know who's been the straw that stirs the drink? The one that has really broken the camel's back and has really hurt SACA in these championship games has been Justin Forrest. Dating back to last year, had 18 points. Then this year, their first meeting, 16 points. And then the Region 5 championship, Forrest had 17 points again. Green Forest is too big. Ballard's going to have to score, you know, 50 points. He had 41 in their win against Lakeview, 77-74, but Ballard's probably going to have to go for 50. Not a lot of teams even score 50 points against Green Forest. I like Green Forest to win this one.
And we've covered all 16 championships matchups in the state of Georgia. Are you going to be at the mall, Kyle?
That is the plan. I booked my hotel over in Athens for the first night of games, so... you can catch me over there. I'm not going to reveal which luxurious hotel I am staying in, but I will be about a mile away. So if you want to go knocking around on hotel doors to see which one I'm staying at, and you need something to do, you might be able to find me one of these days. But I will be in Athens. I will be in Georgia Tech, and I will be everywhere. I'll try and be omnipresent.
Are you going to break out the bow tie?
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. You heard it here first. Ramin Fergani, Kyle Sandy here. We appreciate you tuning into this podcast. We'll probably be back with you after the conclusion of this podcast, early next week maybe, for some season recaps, championship recaps.
Very true, very true. And I have to give a little quick update on the February Frenzy Bracket Challenge. Yours truly won the highest classification for a second straight year.
Barely. You sound a bit glib.
No. I struggled everywhere else, but 7A, I have a feel for 7A, so I won that one. In 6A, it was Coach Corey Black. He won that one in 6A, clinched that already. 5A comes down to a Mr. at TigerDog87 and a Gary Gunther. That is, if Buford wins, that goes to TigerDog. If not, Gary Gunther, Cedar Shoals. If they win, he wins that title. In 4A, same thing, Arthur Lane, brother of Everett Lane, who's been going off for St. Pius. He picks St. Pius to win the state title, which is the only person to do that. If they win, he wins the title. If not, Tiger Dog wins another bracket down in 3A. We're down to a tiebreaker scenario. And in 2A, we have Tiger Dog clinching another title. Sly the Sports Guy clinches in 1A private. And in 1A public, it's going to be down to a tiebreaker again. So very close matches. Yeah, I know nobody really cares about that probably unless you submitted a bracket, but something fun to keep an eye on. And, Ramin, it's time, baby.
It's time. I will look forward to all the coverage, being there at some of these games, and as we said, we'll be back with you early next week.
Yes, sir. I'll try and cook up a good podcast for you. And again, keep an eye on sandyspiel.com. Monday, All-State girls teams come out, and on Tuesday, All-State boys teams come out. Now, that's a Mr. Basketball. It's a Coach of the Year, Most Improved Player, Player of the Year in each classification, Best Rebounder, Best Scorer, Best Passer, Best Shot Blocker, all that good stuff like we had last year. So expect that to come out on Tuesday for the boys, Monday for the girls on sandyspiel.com.